And now, part two of On the Town with Mark Stein.
Welcome back to the second half of our Artie Shaw Centennial celebration. Lots of great music to come, and we'll resume momentarily our archive conversation with Artie Shaw himself. He was a strange man, no band leader quite like him. On the one hand, he despised the Moon June love songs that the music publishers and the record companies insisted you record. Yet on the other hand, the novelty exotica he preferred to do instead can't make any greater claims to be high art. Certainly wouldn't think I'm beginning to see the light, for example, to take a big band classic love song. I would think I'm beginning to see the light. It certainly compares on the artistic front with something like Artie Shaw's theme tune, Nightmare. He claimed to despise the shallowness of celebrity, yet he insisted on dating and marrying A-list Hollywood babes, Betty Grable, Lana Turner, Ava Gardner, Rita Hayworth. One of the rare moments when both sides of that complicated personality came together were when he married Betty Kern, daughter of the great composer Jerome Kern. Last time round, we played this recording of Jerome Kern's great song, Yesterdays, from 1954, right at the very end of Artie Shaw's career, before he laid down his clarinet forever. Here's how it sounded back at the beginning. 1938, Artie Shaw playing Kern's classic, Yesterdays. Certain composers of those kinds of songs, Jerome Kern, Cole Porter was another, some of them had a few problems with kind of jazz improvisations on their tunes. Do you think they were?
Well, see, again, a complicated subject. I mean, you write a piece of music and you write it the way you think you want it to sound. Then here comes somebody, Dizzy Gillespie, Art Tatum, me, whoever. We change the chords, change the structure. I had this discussion with Bud Powell once. He made a record of Embraceable You. And the company sent me a copy of it. And I saw him. Now, Bud was a formidable player, jazz player. First of all, I don't know what the word jazz means. We might as well say growl or bark.
Yeah.
I'm a good bark player. It has that much meaning. No one can define what jazz is in a way that anyone else will accept. But anyway, he played Embraceable You. He called it Embraceable You. There wasn't a note of Embraceable You in that. Changed the structure from 8 bars to 16 bars to 12 bars, whatever, extended. And he asked me what I thought of it, and I said, well, you know, it's fraud. He said, what are you talking about? I said, it's nothing to do with Embraceable You. He said, well, that's true, but I said, you know, I said, why did you call it Embraceable You? Why didn't you call it Opus 48? He said, would have been dishonest. I said, this is dishonest. When you put the words Embraceable on you, I'm expecting da-da-da, da-da-da-da. I'm not hearing that, so that's fraudulent.
Artie Shaw didn't go in for fraud, as he puts it, but he did help redefine certain tunes with joyous, explosive vamps that for many listeners became part of the song. You can find later recordings by other bands of this number, also by Gershwin, that aren't performances of the tune so much as of Artie Shaw's arrangement of it. This is from 1946, and the makes the track is nothing to do with Gershwin. It's Shaw's arranger, Ray Conniff.
For example, we used to play Summertime. I made a record of that, an Eddie Sauter arrangement. Now, I knew Gershwin. If Gershwin were around and he heard that, he'd say, I didn't write that. And I'd say, of course you didn't, George. Eddie Sauter wrote that. He used your theme. You wrote a nice theme. He did something with it. It's like the blues. 12 bars of a certain type of modulatory chordal effect. When in those 12 bars, you can do anything. It's like one man painting a landscape, another man painting the same landscape. Well, if it's Rubens versus Constable, you've got two different landscapes. They recompose it. Same way with music. I don't see why it's such a strange thing that different people do different things with the same subject.
Oh, no, no, and that's
no, the... you and I don't think so, but most people are astounded.
No, well, that's the beauty of the great American popular repertoire that you can
do. Or the interest is not beauty. Yeah. I'm not sure what beauty is, but interest.
Yes.
Beauty may be that which is familiar.
Yes.
When it's unfamiliar, we're uncomfortable, and if we're uncomfortable, we don't like it.
What, in some of your own recordings, though, the last recordings that have just come out, rare and unreleased, recorded...
You always hear the melody.
...in 1954, yes, but there are moments. I mean, there's
Do a lot of things with it, but the melody is stated first.
But there's that wonderful moment in Bewitched, Bothered and Bewildered.
Oh, where I got into Jerry Kern.
Yeah, you go
into
the song.
I didn't even know it was going to happen. It's called The Sound of Surprise. I surprised myself. What's going on? How long can that go on? I could have gone on almost 16 bars with it. I went on four. established the point that the structure was the same, but I didn't know I was going to do it.
Do you find composing yourself, because you've written a lot of music over the years, is that somehow not more satisfying than playing, to actually...
It is, but the trouble with that is, you see, unless you have your own band. I asked Duke one time, and he said to me when I quit the music business, "Man," he said, "you got more guts than any of us." So I said, "Well, what's wrong with you? You got all the money you need." He said, "No, but I got nothing else I can do." Mm-hmm. And he said, "If I'm going to write stuff, I got to have this band to play it." And I would have had to do that. The trouble with composing as opposed to writing is that when it's done, it doesn't exist except as it's re-performed. And each person will stick his own thumbprint on that and change it. Whereas in a book, there it is. You can perceive it differently, but it's there. It's one thing. You can't change that. So if you read Thomas Mann, you're reading Thomas Mann.
Yeah, nobody improvises around his sentences.
You can't change it. If an editor changes something, he accepts it, he has to take responsibility. His name is on the book, and his thumbprint is on the book.
As frustrating as he found musical composition, Artie Shaw found writing songs even more so. Unlike Tommy Dorsey or Glenn Miller, he didn't like lyricists or vocalists. So this is a rare Artie Shaw song, sung by his best-known vocalist, Billie Holiday.
Any old time you want me, I am yours. For just the asking, darling, any old time you need me, I'll be there. With love that's lasting, darling, all through the years we'll stand together, sharing the tears and stormy weather and the sunshine. We'll be yours and mine. Any old time you're blue, you'll have our love to chase away the blues. And any old I'll see you through. So just remember that I am waiting, dear. If ever you want me, I'll be near. Any old time and any place where you may be.
Any old time, that's the way it sounded with Artie Shaw back in 1938. And because Billie Holiday sang it, a lot of female vocalists have picked it up over the years, although none of them have done it in Shaw's arrangement. This is the way Any Old Time sounds in the hands of Ella Fitzgerald.
My heart has no special season. It's yours in sun or rain. I love you, and that's the reason I'd like to make it plain that any old time you want me, I'll be yours. For just the asking, darling, any old time.
And that's more or less how Carmen McRae did it, too.
All through the years, we'll stand together, sharing the tears and stormy weather and the sunshine. Will be yours and mine.
Any Old Time, from Ella Fitzgerald to Carmen McRae to Daryl Sherman.
Any old time you're blue, you'll have our love to chase away the blues. And any old just remember that I am waiting,
Daryl Sherman, and after all those female vocalists, just about the only recording in subsequent years that gets anywhere close to the way Artie Shaw conceived it is this orchestral track by Shaw's former male vocalist, Tony Pastor, conductor.
You often seen those if you've kind of been too big a man to be contained by any
by
of the
medium.
Activities you get into.
Yes, the two honest and pure media that I know of are painting and literature.
Yeah.
Nobody can mess around with a painting. There it is. Van Gogh's Starry Night remains Van Gogh. I don't care what you do. There it is. You can reproduce it and it'll not contain the brightness or the whatever, or the somberness, but the picture's there. In a book, reprinted in 58 different editions and in different languages, the ideation is the same. Hmm. Well, everything else is different. If you got a piece of music, one guy will play the Beethoven ninth one guy, another play it another way. The piece remains more or less the same, but there are vast differences between performers and orchestras.
But people sort of trap art, though, the longer it goes on. I mean, that Mozart concerto, you had a famous run-in with Leonard Bernstein over that.
Was silly. That was a clash of ego. Mm. I don't have that kind of ego. I truly don't. I have my share of ego. You need ego, but you should be in control of it. So, he was out of control of his ego. His ego ran him. He was trying to tell me something because he was showing how much smarter than he was, than he was. Well, I don't think he was smarter. He was different, and I was different. And I said, look, I'm the soloist. If you don't play with me, you're going to sound pretty silly. Because you're going to be out there in left field, and I'm going straight ahead, and you turn the corner. Or I'll turn the corner, and you're going straight ahead. That's not the idea. Where you play with the orchestra in a concerto, there are places where I stop. Do what you want. When you're playing with me, you better stay with my tempo.
And if Bob Wilber says that on Thursday night at the festival hall...
He won't say it, because we've talked about it, and we have no problem. Mm. I'll listen to him. Mm. He wants to play it in one tempo. I'll go there. I'll try to dictate a tempo that makes sense to him and to me. We'll have discussed that. Mm. I asked him the other day, what are you going to do on the cadenza? He played it for me. It's not what's written at all. Well, I said, you want to go that long? Fine. Now, Bernstein would have said, you shouldn't go that long. Well, who the hell is he to tell me how long I should go? Let the audience tell me.
But a lot of people might say you and Bernstein are in a way similar characters. He was another one who didn't want to just...
But he wasn't playing the concerto. He was accompanying me. He was the orchestra. If you played the clarinet, I would listen to him.
Right.
It's very simple. You can't tell someone... You're playing piano and there's a man singing up there. You can't tell him what to do. He's the guy.
Yeah.
The audience is listening to. Now, when the orchestra plays in the concerto, I'll do what I want. And that's not going to bother Wilbur at all.
You've had a go at Leonard Bernstein there just now. You also
we've given him too much time.
Yeah, okay. We'll forget about him.
In 1954, Artie Shaw gave up the clarinet and became a novelist and a dairy farmer and a film producer and the fourth-ranked precision rifleman in America, among many other activities. But having put his clarinet away, he never got it out again and never wanted to. As he said, I did all you can do with a clarinet. Any more would have been less.
You wish you'd recorded, or you wish you'd gotten around?
Oh, listen, I've gone through life knowing that there are probably 20 million things I'll never do that I would have liked to have done. I don't think I'll ever explore the North Pole. I don't think I'll ever be a microbiologist. It would be very nice to be that in another life, but I won't have, but I got this one shot. So I do as much as I can. I have an almost insatiable curiosity. And I've arrived at the place where in my life I know a lot about many things. As I've said earlier, I'm a specialist in non-specialization, which is what man is. Mankind is that, or we wouldn't have lived. I mean, Mr. Darwin discovered that a long time ago.
Yes.
If we hadn't learned how to be non-specialists, we'd have died like the dinosaurs, and we may be on our way now.
Yes.
I don't know whether this culture is going to make it into the 21st century intact. The jury's out.
Do you think when you write, that in a way it's because you've got all those kind of things going on in your head, and they're too, music is too abstract to put all that into?
Well, Keats put it very well, you know. John Keats wrote a line about not wanting to die until his pen had, quote, gleaned my teeming brain. It's a wonderful line. You hope to be able to put a footprint somewhere where it'll last a little while. The illusion is going to go on for a while. Of course, the cement can disappear, too.
Yeah.
But you do the best you can with the material at hand, which is my epitaph. Except I got a better one now. Now it's go away.
Well, I hope you don't go away for a while, Artie Shaw. You're going to be at the Royal Festival Hall on Thursday, and I don't know if I'm entitled to pick a favourite from your
track. Oh, you're entitled to do anything you want, Mark.
But
so am I. I don't mean we don't necessarily have to agree on that, do we?
No. That's fine. But I'd like to end with Summit Ridge Drive, which is one of your own compositions.
Yeah, I wrote that. Well, I didn't write it, improvise it, more or less. I've stated a little. It's the blues, the same old 12-bar blues.
As always, Artie Shaw, you've given us, you've touched on all the big issues.
We covered a small, small spectrum here, didn't we?
Well, no, that's fantastic. I like it when you hit the ground running, as you sadly have done.
Yeah, right.
Artie Shaw, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you, Mark. It's been nice being here.
Well, on this Artie Shaw centennial, we can't leave it with an ancient radio interview sign-off. He was a great musician. Quote, I can say truthfully what very few people can say, that I did something better than anyone else in the world. And he did. He was the best clarinetist, the one with the fullest tone and the slyest shadings. And then he stopped and did other things, and outlived every other band leader. My life turned out the best too, he said. To his, quote, dimwit wives, he was a deranged obsessive. If he went into a bathroom and saw the toilet roll hung up to unwind from the back rather than the front, it drove him nuts. Years after their divorce, Evelyn Keyes said, every time I change a toilet roll, I think of Artie Shaw. I was struck by how often, whatever subject you asked him about, he circled back to intimations of mortality. He needn't have worried.
Do you like rest of your big band peers? Because we do get very sentimental now about the so-called big band era, and you were the first to say, if you like, you know, that's it, it's over for me, and get out. Do you have much time for the Harry Jameses and the Tommy Dorseys and all the people who really, they discovered what they did and they stayed doing
it? I have no time for it. I'm thinking about tomorrow. The now is all we have, and tomorrow is what you're aiming at. If you can get through now to tomorrow, you're doing pretty well. People ask me, what do? I say, I'm a devout breather. I get up every day and breathe, and you better do the same. If you stop that, you're in real trouble.
Is music today worse than it was? You come from that generation where everything seemed possible. I mean, you had composers like Morton Gould.
Everything's possible right now. Listen to John Cage. Anything is possible. Doesn't mean it's good. And I don't know what standards you use anyway to find out if it's good. I have a picture of John Cage that somebody sent me. He's laughing. And I put a caption, why is this man laughing and at whom?
Yes.
Maybe us.
Yes.
We're right. Living in the emperor's cloak time, you know. Everybody's afraid to say the man's naked. And that's true about a lot of art. When you open the door on an art that is incomprehensible or imperceptible to people, if it isn't perceptible sooner or later, now I don't know what it is. Mm. And people talk about major art and minor art. Let's say Beethoven's A minor quartet. Everybody would agree. Or Bach's Toccata and Fugue. Play that for a Kalahari pygmy. Is that art? He's going to say, boy, a bunch of funny noises.
Yes.
So, you know, it's all relative, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I don't think you can make a statement about a work of art that's going to apply to everybody on Earth.
Mm.
And probably you'd be very lucky if it applied equally to two people on Earth.
But do you think with the trick, if you like, there are certain things that one can be fairly... That are fairly reliable. I mean, the Mozart concerto that you...
Well, it was a good piece of work. Here it is, a couple hundred years later. Here I am, some of my work, 50 years later. I would say if a piece of popular music at the time was written lasts 50 years, it's got a good shot at what we laughingly call immortality, because we may be going the way of the dinosaur. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what immortality means anyway. But that's what we aim at, isn't it? We're aiming to transcend this short lifetime we have. Do something that'll outlast us. We have children, and we write music, and we paint, and all that.
Buddy Shaw, born May 23rd, 1910, and we're still listening.
On the Town is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises. All rights reserved.